Hey guys, it is Mina reminding you to download and subscribe to That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. This week, Sarah chats with Heidi Gardner about how she went from a funny hairdresser in LA to SNL cast member and the Academy Award nominee who inspired her to take her first improv class. You can find That's What She Said wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts truly believes the real mastermind behind the Patriots' success is Bill Belichick's dog, which is a Kikle? I think I'm getting that. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I'll Google it later. I'm delighted. Lenny and I are both, frankly, delighted today to be joined by a second-time guest who actually brought Lenny a present. Last time we taped in person. Unfortunately, we are not taping in person today, but I am still delighted to be joined by Cynthia Freeland, who is an analyst at NFL Network. You've seen her on Game Day Morning. You've heard her stuff. She's everywhere. Cynthia, thank you so much for coming back.
Of course. I'm just so sad. No more dog presents because I really, truly enjoy shopping for dogs more than humans. I'm just sad we're not in person, but don't worry. I will make it up to Lenny next time.
You got him it was like a stuffed alligator, which he destroyed in, I think, like 2 minutes flat. So
perfect. That gives me a benchmark. Next time it needs to be even faster.
How are you doing these days before we get started? Oh, whatever. Okay. So we're going to do the AFC East. This is what happens when I don't talk to the person I'm doing the show with before the show. Cynthia knows, we're going to cover. So we're doing divisional previews. And last week, of course, we did the NFC South with Warren Sharp. This week we are rocketing over to the AFC and doing the AFC East, which, I know I keep saying this, but I love doing this exercise because you go depth chart by depth chart. You're looking at the improvements. You're looking at where teams left off last year. And Cynthia, just overarching thought on the AFC East, this might be the widest gap between the quality of defenses versus offenses in the NFL right now.
Completely. The biggest, widest gap. And also the one where, what are we going to get from these offenses? I think if anyone claims they know, they're fooling themselves. So I think the defenses are far more known and obviously, you know, and better. But also, we don't know what we're going to get from these offenses.
No, not at all. It could be pretty ugly in some cases. But there's upside. There is, I think, room for optimism, too, and mystery and question marks across the division. Look at me trying to be optimistic when it comes
Somebody's got to win the division, Mina.
Somebody's got to win it. Somebody's got to win it. I have a theory as to who that will be. We can kind of decide at the end. I think I tweeted, I thought I was being quite bold this weekend. I was like, AFC East might have 3 of the top 10 offenses in the NFL, thinking that was like such a spicy take. Then, and I should have checked this before I tweeted, I went back and looked and, the 3 defenses I had in mind, Buffalo, New York, and New England, they all finished in the top 10 in weighted DVOA last year. So it was not that spicy of a take. And for those who are, look, obviously in many metrics, the fact that they get to play each other's offenses helps, but DVOA does account for opponent as well. And I think regardless of opponent, there's a lot of talent on all 3 of those defenses. And Miami in particular, obviously the secondary, there's some interesting roster building going on there as well.
Yeah, look, I think when you look to see any time you have multiple quarterbacks that are unknown in any division, mm-hmm. You know, you've got 2 third-year guys, and we kind of all agree that by the third year, that's when you figure out who you are, right? Like, that's kind of who you become in the league. And then you've got 2 guys who we really don't know anything about. And then, of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we know a lot about, but we don't know how they're going to use him. So it's just so interesting to see, like, if your quarterback's your pitcher, is the defense going to give them enough run support? So which one is going to get the right sort of help? And that's... Yeah. Because a quarterback's best friend, a quarterback's best friend is a lot of different things, but defense is really probably their best friend.
Yeah, and I think these, again, like, certainly I think New England, Buffalo, those teams that are going to be defined by their defenses, right? And you saw that, I think, reflected in how they approach their, not Buffalo necessarily, but in how some of these teams approach their off seasons as well. So I wanted to start with the Jets. It's funny. I feel like every time I talk about the AFC, we always lead with New England. And we're in the middle of this like massive inflection point in this division with Brady gone, obviously. Buffalo, they were the favorites to win. I think I saw in some books now they've got New England, which is really what a stunning tribute to Bill Belichick that he can roll out Jarrett Stidham and still be the favorite. It's amazing. But I want to talk about the Jets, which is a team, and I'm leading with them, Cynthia, because they're a team that you know very well, you know, having done some work during their preseason last year, I believe, right? I'm right about that. Okay.
Yes. No, you're totally right.
Mm-hmm. And they're a weird team. They're an interesting team. They could go a lot of ways. Like, I you know, they're a team, I think, when you tell people, let's start with the defense. When you tell people some of the numbers on defense last year, I think people would be surprised, like, just how good this run defense was, for example, just by about any metric.
Yeah, look, one of the ways to, like, eyeball test to just get a good metric for me, like, one of the, like, first entry points I look at is what a defense does on first down, because that really sets up the cadence for the rest of the downs, right? And if you look to see, you know, 4.33 yards allowed per play on first down, that's passing and rushing combined, that's best in the NFL. So their run defense really helped out and really allowed, by the way, the Bills are second, which is hilarious to me. Or, I mean, sorry, the Patriots are second, the Bills are like 10th, right? So ultimately, when you're looking to see, you know, you're talking about these good defenses, you're right. But their defense allowed them to stay in games that they really had no business being in, especially when Sam Darnold had mono last year and things were, you know, we're on quarterback 17. So, you know, ultimately, like, just like I said, that's it's just a good proxy for how good the defense is.
Somebody, when I said the thing about the three top 10 defenses, whatever, someone wrote back to me and said, how can you say that? Like, look at the cornerbacks on this team, cornerbacks rather. And that is a weakness, man. Like, you know, and I think edge rusher is still a big question mark.
But
look, those were question marks last year and they still performed really well. It's a Greg Williams defense, so it's weird as hell. you know, it's like they have accepted the fact that there's no four-man rush, which, again, it's a Greg Williams defense. So you've got DBs blitzing like crazy, which, of course, Jamal Adams is, that's a skill set of his. Tons of, you know, disguised coverages. Brian blitz Brian Poole a ton as well.
Brian Poole's slot performance. Like, really, what this goes to show you, this defense, what Greg Williams does do well. He's a wacky dude, but like, what he does well is defend the middle of the field. And often first downs and drives are extended. First downs are earned and drives are extended by what goes on in the middle of the field. So being able to have Brian Poole, very good free agent, you know, that he didn't leave the team. They got him for $5 million.
Great contract.
Great contract. Really good signing. Joe Douglas, that was A+ on that one. And defending the slot, people, you know, there's some, for whatever reason, it's like using the pejorative, oh, he's only a slot corner. But no, slot's actually a really important place to be. So, you know, despite some a really weird, their defense was most certainly, I mean, and so many injuries, like C.J. Mosley, they paid so much for last season. So I do think they'll be better in that regard. And I do think that, you know, they have a lot more, this sounds mean, but it's actually not mean. They've added to their average of players, right? Like the average.
Yeah, they
of
just have like NFL players now.
Yeah, which is not mean at all. Than, you know, whatever.
I'm glad you mentioned C.J. Mosley, because simply having him back and healthy is a tremendous upgrade. The linebacker group, honestly, him, Avery Williamson, they signed Patrick Owanosor from the Ravens. Like, again, NFL players. We know the safeties, Jamal Adams, Marcus May, good area of strength. I think, other than cornerback, you know, the question again is like, are they going, like, can they get a standard pass rush at all? And to me, you know, so much of that depends on getting more production out of Quinn and Williams. I realize plays on the inside, but they didn't sign him to stuff the run, right? He was supposed to be a can't miss prospect. And my one concern, and I'm curious to hear your thought on this, is I loved him coming out of college.
Me too.
And he just did not produce much in the way of pressure. My concern, Cynthia, is that it's a bad scheme fit. For what, you know, what Greg Williams asks his defensive linemen to stunt a ton and move all over the place. Quinn Williams is this downhill, just bulldozer of a man. And I just kind of, I think he is the key. Like, if he is good, this defense will take that next step or sustain their level of play. And I am a little bit worried about him and his role in this unit.
Well, I've been hearing that he's been working out with the defensive backs and really taking care of his diet and addressing something that I don't think that they, I think he did not take the diet as seriously ahead of last season as maybe they thought, you know, and I do think that another area to help Quinnen Williams, which sounds kind of crazy, but they did get just now, they recouped some of their dead money, like $11 million of cap flexibility from the Trumaine Johnson kind of the way that exited. So, you know, there's been rumors about maybe Logan Ryan coming as a better corner, and or maybe, you know, we can hear some Jadeveon Clowney rumors, which I don't even believe that one for a second. I have no
stay away.
Yeah, like, I have no basis for that. But ultimately, I think getting better corners will also help Quinnen Williams, because corners and guys up front all work together. So I know it sounds a little nuts to be like, hey, get Logan Ryan, they'll help Quinnen Williams out. But giving, you know, Quinnen Williams a time to have just even another second where a quarterback has to think about what they're doing will really help Big Q get to the quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. So those are things that, like, the way the front and the back work together, all three levels of the defense need to be to work more cohesively. And I think CJ Mosley being back also helps that. So there, you're Huge. Really getting that kind of, that you need a quarterback to think for a second. They can't just, you know, just throw it, right? Like they, mm-hmm. they need to think. So, and that's where Quinnen Williams will have an opportunity to really adjust to the speed of this game. And assuming he's in better shape this season, that could be a real, you know, I'm trying to look for the positives here, right? That could be a real source of positivity, because I did like his Alabama tape a lot, and it seemed like he definitely didn't live up to it last season.
Does he still have braces? I think that's also a huge thing we can't ignore. It's so cute.
It's so cute.
Adult braces. So cute. He's just like such a lovable looking human. Easy guy to root for.
So nice. Yeah, he always is like super, like in the preseason, you know, when you were with the Rams, you get a chance to meet more of the players and see their personality. And he's just like, he was like a big teddy bear, like a really sweet, like just a nice kid, you know?
They all make me feel old now. Speaking of nice kids who I unequivocally support, let's talk about Sam Darnold. So I have been an irrational Sam Darnold defender. And a lot of that is predicated on the fact that I feel strongly he's been put in a position to fail by this football team, and by his own immune system. You know, and then at the beginning of this offseason, Cynthia, I was so frustrated because they didn't sign a receiver, you know, and I thought they were, and I was worried, like, really, George Fant is your marquee offensive line signing? What are we doing, guys? But they did address, or at least begin to address, some of those issues, I believe. Drafting Mekhi Becton, potentially raw tackle, first round. The Fant contract, George Fant contract too, it's really a 1-year deal. So I know I blew a lot of smoke about that. But I do think they added a couple of players on the inside of the line who will be, again, NFL players. I know, like, that's Connor McGovern, Greg Van Roten. Players, actual football.
Alex Lewis, Cameron Clark. Helpful. They got a lot of rotation in there too, which is good. Like depth, you know, like that. I think that'll help.
I think Breshad Perriman was a nice consolation prize. He has like flashed intermittently in the NFL, right? After being sort of labeled as like a bust, and then he kind of came back a couple times and at the end of last year produced. And of course, I loved Denzel Mims. I've raved about him on this podcast, but these are all question marks. Like Denzel Mims, for example, like who I think is like has some of the most exciting college tape, right? If you like contested catches and you like guys flying through the air, like they're, you know, on, you know, those like, those jets that you can like fly over the water with, like Kenny Powers, that's what Denzel Mims looks like to me. But I don't know if he can run more than two routes. I don't know if Breshad Perriman can play well consistently for a season. I don't know if Mekhi Becton is ready to play in the NFL. So I think, like, I like some of these moves, Cynthia, but there's so much uncertainty still around this offense.
Totally. And then, I mean, look, there's a lot of, I guess the point is when my overarching takeaway for this entire team is that the average was raised, but they weren't starting from a really good spot. and Darnold being able to, like, look, Darnold's deep passing really distinguishes and differentiates him if you look at his college performance based on other people's performance. He's a good deep passer. And they took Robbie Anderson away, and they didn't have a lot of deep passes last season because there wasn't enough time, and also Darnold was not playing for most of it. So mm-hmm. adding these pieces like Perriman, sure, Denzel Mims has a lot of deep receptions from college, Baylor, like that's, you talk about it, flying through the air, but the ability to read a defense, and especially with yeah. this offseason, is going to be tricky, because if you don't have, like, it's going to be easier for teams who have stud receivers already in place to adapt. So, like, the Cowboys, I know that's not the division, but the Cowboys, for example, when you got Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, that sets CeeDee Lamb up for a lot of success, because he won't need to read as hard yeah. of a defense, because the best corners will leave him alone a little bit, at least to begin with. Whereas, yeah. like, right off the bat, like, are you really super, intimidated by, like, Rashad Berryman, Denzel Mims, Jamison Crowder, and, like, what, Josh Doctson? You know, yeah. or, like, so, to me, it's going to be a harder initial kind of threshold. And so if Denzel Mims doesn't come out looking super strong right from the jump, that's okay. I do think he'll fold into it, because I think it's just going to be very hard to read for anyone to read a defense if we don't have as much, you know, actual time for them to, you know, you can only do so much virtually.
It's not going to be okay, because I drafted him first in Dynasty, and I really need him to produce early on. But from a football standpoint, it is. No, it is. It's such a good point, by the way. Like, every time we talk about these teams, we really need to consider who is helped and hurt by the limited offseason and sort of everything that entails. And undeniably, you're absolutely right. The Jets are a team that are not helped by it, given all of the churn. Another player I want to mention who I think is going to fly under the radar is Chris Herndon, tight end, coming yep. back, who had a great connection well, yes. with Darnold before he got, you know, hurt. So I love that. Also, Le'Veon Bell was great last year. I know his numbers don't bear that out, but he was. Poor guy, man. Like, he was running into a brick wall over and over, and he was super useful mm-hmm. as a receiver. Again, maybe that's not reflected in the contract or where you drafted him in fantasy, but he's still a very good football player. Before we wrap on the Jets, I just kind of want to talk about Darnold and get your feeling on him, because the reason I defend him so much, and I think my friend Nate Tice, who I did this quarterback draft with, he jokes that he can't quit him, is because he has this echelon, right? I always get that wrong.
Sure.
Upper echelon of echelon. Plays. Sure. Echelon. He can make the really, really difficult throws.
Yeah.
What remains to be seen is if he can consistently make the easy throws, I think. And he's holding on to it way too long. He's doing all the things rookies do when they haven't been put in a good position. Holds on to it too long, right? Panics a little bit. Forces throws he really has no business attempting. And it's weird, though, because he's not, when he, like, his forced throws, his overly, which sometimes lead to picks, they're not insane. It's not like, I don't watch him and think that's a quarterback who has trouble reading defenses. I think that's a quarterback who needs to learn how to throw it away and check down more. And I think it's because he has all the tools.
He does not check down very often. We don't know what was asked of a player, so it's very hard to absolutely know, but it appears, based on kind of knowledgeable football minds that I've talked to, it appears that he's not really checking down and trying to force his kind of first read. The interesting part for me about, you know, like, when it comes to Sam Darnold, he's had to adjust to, obviously, having Todd Bowles initially. Todd Bowles, a more, you know, offensive or defensive minded coach, and Sam Darnold plays offense, and, you know, there was different dynamics at work there. And now you have Adam Gase, and then he didn't really have a full Adam Gase season because Mono took him out, and that was hard to deal with. And if you look, like I said, their yards per play on first down, they ranked number 30 in the NFL. So yeah. they weren't being set up in, they weren't disguising with play action. They weren't making the things that most people had success with last season. They weren't doing those things. At least they weren't doing them convincingly. So ultimately, I'm with you about Darnold. I also think that with a few more reps with the right people, for example, getting his Brashad Perriman, Josh Jackson, Denzel Mims reps, right? Like getting all of those in. Jameson Crowder was a big asset to him last season. So let's see, let's see what happens with a little bit more time together and a little bit more, you know, I'm with you. I actually think Darnold is, I think this could be a very, with a little bit of luck, because their schedule is pretty tough, but with a little bit of luck, like I do think that he could really get some key wins under his belt. You saw what happened weeks 9 through 17 last year when he came back, 245.2 passing yards per game. Like that's a nice number. So when you look to see, you know, what he actually did when he was playing, it was very good. So it's not like you're coming out of nowhere, right? Like he just, I think a little bit more like quality reps where he's able to, you know, understand what he's seeing and have maybe like, you know, just another half second more. That's really what's going to make the difference.
Jameson Crowder, he's an excellent number three.
Totally.
But if he's been asked to do more than that, it's suboptimal. Yeah, I'm with you. They're an interesting team. I really think they could go a lot of ways. I think the holes we discussed in the defense are very real. And I think there's just so much uncertainty in the offense that I think this team could look very different at the end of the season than how they look at the beginning.
Totally. Totally agree.
An opposite situation. I think a team, again, that we're talking about, okay, who is hurt by this sort of uncertainty in the offseason, who's helped? A team that's helped is the Buffalo Bills. So much continuity. Okay, they're bringing back their entire offensive line.
Helpful.
Same coach Sean McDermott. Same offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, who I've praised and will praise here. Same defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier, who really should be a head coaching candidate again.
Totally
incredible continuity. Pretty much, you talked about Allen and Darnold in concert. Obviously, same draft. Could not be more different in terms of like who's being put in a good position. Yeah, I guess Josh Allen's rookie year was sort of up dubious. I think you could quibble with that, but I thought last year he was in excellent position. Daboll in particular made some improvements. And this year, Cynthia, I think he has one of the best wide receiver groups in the NFL.
You know what? I was just about to say that the thing that people look, they didn't know with free agency because it was right in the beginning of coronavirus, but the teams who got like DeAndre Hopkins and Stephon Diggs in the case of the Bills, they actually, in my opinion, did a much bigger favor for themselves because they secured, in the case of the Bills, they secured a real known entity that has quantifiable value. And sure, you didn't pick in the first round, but you went and got things that were smart later, right? Like AJ Epenesa is a great fit for them. Super athletic. It adds a little bit of youth to their defensive front, isn't going to be asked to save the world, is just going to be asked to understand and participate, and then, you know, going to be asked to increasingly integrate. And by the way, it is a lot easier just historically for a pass rusher to be effective from day one than it is for a wide receiver. Again, reading defenses versus just go get the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately, having Diggs, they did give up a lot, but ultimately that was a smart acquisition for them, given all the other pieces that they have, because it is a known quantity and they know how to use him. And look, Josh Allen doesn't check down either. He needs to learn. But you know, look, it's interesting because they have that. And by the way, in addition to that defensive front, they've got maybe the second best corner in the league, Tre'Davious White. Yes. And ultimately those two things work together to help out Josh Allen, because Josh Allen, we've seen be a little erratic and have some turnovers. And I think that it will do nothing but help him. The more precise route runners he has, the better the defense is. And ultimately that run game, now you've got Singletary in the second year. And then I really like their Zach Moss acquisition.
Love Zach Moss.
Right. So they've done a good job kind of addressing things that add depth in really smart places.
Massive upgrade, by the way. I mean, we love Frank Gore, but going to Zach Moss, I think is an upgrade, because it's like, okay, well, you know, he's like younger Frank Gore, basically. He's going to be the thunder to Singletary's lightning, which will probably be annoying for fantasy players, but great for the Bills. But yeah, okay, so like Josh Allen. Let's talk about Josh Allen. So last year, terrible on deep passes, since coming to the NFL. Now, Josh Allen defenders, of which there are many, and they are active, and they are loud, and they are vocal on Twitter, and they usually have hashtag Bills Mafia in their handle. They will say, well, his receivers let him down. And I think there's a little bit of rest to that. You know, I love John Brown. He's always open, but some drops here and there. And then his first year, I think, you know, definitely some veracity to that. He has Stephon Diggs now, okay? Mm-hmm. He has no excuses. Like, we will find out this year more than Sam Darnold who Josh Allen is as a quarterback. Because, I mean, if he can't improve his deep game with Stephon Diggs and John Brown on the football field, good luck. Okay, so people always say, you never give him enough credit. I said numerous times, you go check, he improved last year in the short and intermediate area. A lot of that, I continue to be very impressed by Brian Daboll, what he's done. And part of the reason to that is, like, it's so rare for an offensive coordinator to make that kind of jump year to year. Like, he was the offensive coordinator the previous year, and basically he called an offense for Josh Allen. Like, it was almost like he called it for the platonic idea of Josh Allen. Like, he was, you know what I mean? Like, counting on him to connect on those deep passes, be that sort of pocket passer and not take advantage of his mobility. He adjusted last year, and I think the results spoke for themselves. He really, really got some improvements out of him. So I'm very curious to see if he can get more out of him, because I like everything about this team, but I don't think he was a good quarterback last year.
The hard part for me about Josh Allen is because you got to figure out, like, okay, if you were to drop him on a neutral team, what would the result be? Because when you have that good of a defense, then you have a benefit. It's a benefit, yeah, for sure. So on a neutral team, what would happen? And then you have to remember, okay, well, then they'll build around him to address kind of the areas that are potentially holes. And then, oh, by the way, with someone who is mobile like that, and I know Josh Allen's a big kid and I would never suggest anyone getting hurt, but you do have, if you're getting tackled more often, it is a fact. It's possible to get hurt. And then, so it's like, what, Matt Barkley behind it? You know, like, and so these are things where you're like, okay, so value at the quarterback position, when you're looking to see, like, what is the situation, it's just risky. And it seems like an unnecessary risk sometimes when it comes to holding on to the ball too long, or these mistakes that are, they're addressing them and they are building around him really smart. Even I thought I called Cole Beasley an overpay. I thought they paid too much for him. But I do think he was valuable last season. You know, yeah, it may not totally be like the best contract ever, but they did get a lot of value out of him. So it's interesting to me. It will be interesting to me to see how, like, let's hope Josh Allen can stay healthy and do the things to kind of be smart about getting himself in a position to get it to John Brown or get it to Stephon Diggs, and use the fact that defenses will be drawn to John Brown or Stephon Diggs and get it to the other one. So read the defense a little bit, right? And see where you have a better matchup. And that's where it's going to be really what Josh Allen's capable of doing, and not necessarily, that's where the offensive coordinator there's only so much. Brian Daboll's not playing, right? So, yeah, you know, like, there's only so much he can do to put him in the best position. And it seems like they've done that. So really, more so than anything, like, it is now on Josh Allen to show us who he is.
I have long felt his comp, the upside Josh Allen comp, is Cam Newton. And man, Josh Allen is such an explosive threat on his feet. And, like, I know we do talk about that and he gets credit for it, but honestly, he should probably get more because he is terrifying on the move. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's not just big. I think there's just a lot of parallels between him and Cam there. And along those same lines, when I look back at Cam Newton, I think of the years in which he was used poorly, the years in which he was used well. I just think there's a lot of lessons there for Allen. I look at Cam Newton's 2018 season, when Norv Turner implemented more of a quick passing game. And I do think something like that would help Allen as well, if he can sort of improve his, he has improved his touch on shorter, passes. Mm-hmm. And they have brought, I think I tweeted this the other day, his intended air yards per attempt from Next Gen Stats was 9.4 last year, which seems like a lot, and it is tied for fourth in the NFL. But the previous year, it was 11. First right in the NFL. It should not be that high. Like,
no.
So I think they're they're figuring him out a little bit. He's learning to play quarterback. But this is, it's make or break. It really is. He will be helped by their defense, which great defenses do tend to regress, but this defense, you mentioned Epinesa, like they made some, I actually think they might be better on the defensive line, quite frankly. They added not only Epinesa to that front seven, but Mario Addison, Vernon Butler, Quinton Jefferson, extremely underrated defensive tackle mm-hmm. out of Seattle. I was really bummed they didn't keep him.
Well, and let's be honest, their early schedule also is conducive to the defense getting in a good rhythm. Assuming they play the normal schedule, it goes New York Jets, Miami Dolphins, and then even the Los Angeles Rams, and then the Las Vegas Raiders. So those are their first four games, and I'm not taking anything away from the Rams, and I'm not taking anything away from, you know, the Raiders offense, but ultimately those are some nice first four teams to cut your teeth on as a defense. So it's getting in a little bit of a flow before you have Tennessee and Kansas City. That's probably a good place to start.
The secondary is so good.
So good.
Sean McDermott, someone asked me the other day, like, after Shanahan, it was not the other day, it was yesterday, Kyle Shanahan got his extension. They were like, is Sean McDermott next? And I was like, if I was a Buffalo fan, I would hope so, man. He has absolutely crushed it. Incredible drafting as well, and some free agencies. I mean, you know, Mike Hyde, incredible. We'll go down. The combination of Hyde and Poyer is incredible. You mentioned Tre'Davious White, arguably the second best cornerback in the NFL. I couldn't agree more. Taron Johnson, slot corner, fantastic. They signed Josh Norman, which, you know, it's like upside. Sure, we'll see.
AJ
McDermott would know. McDermott would know. Yeah. AJ Klein. Yeah, just tons of. Yeah. I think this defense should be as good as they were last season.
I agree. I think they've done a good job of, you know, like even Ed Oliver last season, adding him first round pick in 2019. And then like they've added like slowly some youth to more seasoned players, which tends to be a nice way to do it. Right. Like, cause if you have to keep adding people, you know, very quickly and you don't have a nice, like they're a well-established group of, I mean, Jerry Hughes is underrated. I don't think people talk enough about him.
Yes. That's such a good point, by the way. Yes.
Yeah. So you get to add to a very strong defense, but do it nice and slow, where you don't need, like, the expectations aren't in one year that, like I said, folding AJ Epinesa in is kind of the best way to do it, right? Like, you've got Mario Addison. Okay, you're good. He knows what he's doing. Jerry Hughes. Okay, he knows what he's doing. You know, like, they have enough people who know what they're doing that you can add these younger players and get more production out of them without the expectations. That's a nice way to do it.
Yeah, and just such a, I mean, they're a great example when we talk about defenses and how you build them. And really, I think this is also true of New England and Miami. We'll talk about, you know, this concept of kind of building defenses a little bit, although, you know, they have spent some capital up front, but the strength of the defense being the secondary, and the Bills don't have a stud, you know, big name pass rusher. You mentioned Jerry Hughes, people don't talk about him, but they still rank highly in just about every pass rush metric or perform well enough. And a lot of that has to do with just the skill of the players behind them. Also, I think Leslie Frazier did a terrific job, the combination of him and McDermott, rather, in terms of the sort of pressure they were able to dial up. So it's a great defense. And I'll say it now, it is why I think the Bills will win the division.
I'm with you. I think the Bills, it's the Bills to lose. Like, you know, obviously that's dependent on, like, everything.
So don't
else.
Yell at me, Bills fans. Just because I'm critical of Josh Allen, I just said you're going to win the division.
I get yelled at by Bills fans the most.
Leave me alone. Like, they're passionate.
Leave me alone. I'm telling you you're going to win the division.
I'm being positive. It's like if you don't praise the quarterback, it's like nothing else matters. I just praise literally every other aspect of your team. Okay. Another totally rational, calm, notoriously chill fan base, New England. Man, they do not like people raising questions about Jarrett Stidham, which is insane. Like, what do we even know? Bill Barnwell and I did a podcast on Stidham. You can look it up. I don't remember when exactly it was, but the title is Stidham, I Hardly Know Him. was proud of that one.
Yeah, no, I love it. I listen to that. I love you and Bill. I love it.
Thank you. Well, so, you know, I went back and watched some of his preseason. And there's always only so much, as you know, that you can kind of take from a preseason just because everything's so vanilla. It's so much. I mean, you know, I guess we can kind of go over a little. Let's start with Stidham in the offense a little bit, which is you know, he looked fine. Not as athletic as I would have hoped. Made a few nice throws, primarily off of play action. He took a lot of sacks, but he was playing behind, obviously, backups. But then he was playing against backups. Mm-hmm. So again, preseason. They are committed to him quite clearly at this point, although Cam Newton is still out there. Man, if they signed Cam Newton, let's start here. If they signed Cam Newton, would you still pick Buffalo to win the division?
It would be a little harder because, I would then know Cam Newton's healthy because I don't think that Bill Belichick's, which would be great. And so a healthy Cam Newton is a total game changer. So that might sway me. But if it were another team that signed him, I don't even know because I don't even know if it'd be like 100%. But I would trust that the output you get from Cam was more like 2015 and less like, you know.
He's so spicy. What a spicy signing. I would just love it.
I would love it too. I actually thought, I didn't know, I mean, without looking at, I didn't know what Cam Newton was asking for in the marketplace. I still don't know. I haven't heard anything that
nothing,
I believe.
Yeah, nothing's out there. Right.
Right. Yeah. So I haven't heard anything that I believe. And I actually was with you. I thought that Cam would be a nice fit in Buffalo, again, assuming he was healthy. So that I was hoping for that because I thought that that could be, a really nice, interesting fit. But, you know, Cam Newton, and if he were healthy anywhere would be really interesting, obviously. But, yes. You know, Cam as a Pat.
Just, I love it. I love everything about it. Buffalo would never, they'd never let him challenge Allen like that. I mean, that's the thing, right? All these teams with younger quarterbacks, they don't want him challenging the young guys. But I would have thought New England would have wanted some competition for Stidham. So far, they don't, which, again, they've seen much more of him than any of us. So, you know, if there's something there, they know it. That said, Cynthia, he's not walking into the best situation. So let's talk about that. I mean, what do you think of this skill group?
I don't know what to think. I mean, I know Julian Edelman's good. And I know, like I told you, middle of the field is where first downs happen. So you've got a great Julian Edelman. Great. Like, you got that. That is a big leg up in many, many ways. I did like the Mohamed Sanu sign. And I think N'Keal Harry will grow and be better. And I'm believing that Sony Michel's, I believe it's an ankle surgery, but I believe he's getting back healthier. So that's good. And, you know, I think Damian Harris, who we haven't talked about because, you know, he's the third round pick in 2019. He was out of Alabama. He was a much bigger stud. Like, he was like a very good prospect, and we didn't see much out of him last year. So I'm interested to see what happens there. And we've always got James White. So I do think there's some interesting upside there. I'm not sure how it all plays out. The receiver situation, I would feel better if, you know, like, I like Mohamed Sanu a lot, but if Julian Edelman is your strongest receiver and, you know, N'Keal Harry on that, it seems suspect. You know, I don't know how, I'm assuming they've worked well together. Who knows? But I don't know what I've seen out of Stidham. Like, I've seen some good stuff with him from a clean pocket back in his college days, in his, you know, Baylor and then Auburn, both. And he had some good clean pockets, probably the best way to approximate like what your best potential could be. So I've seen good stuff out of that from college. And then, you know, like you said, that preseason was like very vanilla. It told me absolutely nothing about him.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, and so it's hard. And then, like, what, you've got Brian Hoyer, which, sure, Brian Hoyer does add, they love Brian Hoyer. They brought him back a billion times now, right? So it just seems like a strange quarterback room. I guess that's the third quarterback in there, to best of my knowledge, is still Brian Lewerke, who, another Michigan State quarterback. I'm from East Lansing. That's a scary prospect. Not a great.
Yeah. Again, I continue to be puzzled by the lack of competition in that room. here's the thing. It is both not a alluring group, but also probably going to be better than last year. And we talked about, you know, Brady and how much he was hampered by his skill players, just because Mohamed Sidibé is not as bad as we saw last year. I'll start that. Nope. He's been a consistently good player most of his career. He was obviously banged up. So there's that. I think N'Keal Harry will, he should take a step forward. If he doesn't, he's a bust, right? But,
correct.
I imagine
he's a first round pick, so he's got to step up. They won't have patience for that.
I'm glad you mentioned Damian Harris, because I'm pretty dubious of Sony Michel personally. A lot of the advanced metrics are not super positive on him, and that kind of checks out with the eye test, in my opinion, quite frankly. So yeah, I think this offense is gonna look a lot like the early 2000s Patriots offenses. I think it's gonna be uglier and heavier. I think you'll see it's gonna be a ton of play action. I think you're gonna have Stidham throwing the ball out of heavier sets a lot more. They ran a ton of 11 last year. Mm-hmm. I think that will help. You know, they also added those tight ends in the draft. I'm not going to pretend like I have strong opinions about them right now, and then signed Danny Vital.
They're third round picks.
Yeah, I think I have one of them on my dynasty team. And they signed Danny Vital. I never know how to say his name. Vitali, the fullback.
Yeah, yep. He went to Northwestern. That's how the only reason I know who he is.
Yeah, he's a chunk. So, that was obviously a major missing piece last year, by the way, with James Devlin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think this is a team led by the defense that's hoping mm-hmm. for upside from Stidham. So let's talk about that defense, because that's the fun part of this team.
Totally.
If I was a Patriots
safety
fan. That's
so,
optimistic part.
So if I'm a Patriots fan, obviously, all right, you already know that Stephon Gilmore is the best corner in the league. I mean, it's very hard to say someone's better than him. I can't find a metric that really supports anything else. But the interesting part about what I like about their defense and what I like tracking about their defense is how often they use three safety defensive sets. And I told you the middle of that field is really the place where first downs and touchdowns are earned. And the reason why the Pats have the second lowest yards per play attempted on their defense, second best, right? Second only to the Jets. Like, but theirs is more balanced. It's second play, and it's low against the pass, and it's low against the run. They don't have an imbalance where it's one versus the other. It's because they are not allowing opposing quarterbacks to read them, right? They're using those three safeties. They're showing false leverages, just so meaning like, the wide receivers don't know if it's inside or outside. They don't know which leverage to choose. So they're tricking people. And that was an interesting part, because then you see a guy like I told you, folding in young guys with some of the new guys. Like you saw Chase Winovich last year have a really nice first year and is a third round pick because he was able to benefit from the extra time that the safeties and corners give him in order to rush a passer. So, you know, it's an interesting blend. And obviously, if it's Bill Belichick, you know that defense is going to be where they shine. So it's not surprising. But it's those three safety sets that really intrigue me.
I mean, the depth in the secondary is obviously the strength of this team. And, you know, they retained it. Obviously, you lost Jaron Harmon. But for the most part, they should be as good as they were last year. It would be hard. Again, it's hard to be as good as they were last year on pass defense, so they'll probably be a little bit worse. But just from a talent perspective, they have the personnel. And, you know, then they have players like J.C. Jackson who could step up and even take a bigger role. And as you mentioned correctly, it really allows Bill Belichick to do Bill Belichick things up front, quite frankly, where they did lose a ton of players. And maybe I have too much faith in him, but, you know, they lost Van Noy to Miami, we'll talk about, Jamie Collins. You know, it's always these guys who, like, left or who, like, well, whatever. That's different cases. Danny Shelton with the Lions, Collins with Lions, too. But
Lord,
I don't care. I don't know if that's crazy. It's Bill Belichick. He'll be fine. They drafted Josh Uche and Anfernee Jennings, and I think that'll help a lot up front. But
I think Tucker was a good add too, right? I know he's a safety, and I talk about that safety depth. They brought over Adrian Phillips from the Chargers. They added some really key pieces that I think, look, I if there's one area that like you can't question Bill Belichick in, it's like defense. Like you just have to give it. Like it's like, all right, you are. No one has a better proven track record of that than this. So
I mean,
it's like I'm not worried either.
Duggard is, you know, I think there was a few stories in New England written after the draft, and after they drafted him.
He's one of those like 10 children people, right? Like,
oh yeah, Duggard, yeah, the Jace, yeah. God, what's called Lenoir Rhymes? I had not heard of that before. Being told to watch Kyle Duggar before the draft. Lenoir Rhymes, I think. Yeah. So, and they also signed Adrian Phillips. He's a hybrid guy, and I think people pointed out there's sort of a concerted strategy to add speed and some of these sort of more tweenerish players, Josh Uche being another example, as a way of combating RPOs, which is something they struggled a bit with last year. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. But I think Bill Belichick just likes having chess pieces that he can put on his board and move them around. So I don't know. I'm not concerned about it. I'm not too concerned about the losses either. I think it'll be fine. But I do think they're going to have to carry that offense. Which brings us
absolutely
to our final team, Cynthia. The Miami Dolphins. I have all their stats from last year. I have all their stats from last year, but I'm not sure any of them are relevant. Let's start on defense because this is New England South.
I went to college with Brian Flores, one of
really?
My college friends. Yeah. He was a little older than me, but we were at BC together, and he is one of, if not the like absolute, as far as humans go, like if I could cheer for just humans, I would 1,000,000% be, it's Brian Flores is one of the best humans I've ever met. Great human.
I think, look, his players clearly love him. He's clearly had such success there. You know, implementing a culture. And I like the way this defense is built. Again, they're a back to front team like New England. The strength of this team is obviously the cornerbacks. They went out and signed Byron Jones, who I think he's the highest paid cornerback. It was after the Slay signing. So he hits the title.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think
he was just freaking solid, man. Like, yeah, he doesn't have the picks or whatever, but he's like a solid A-minus player. He's just going to give you like, he's a leader. He'll be a leader on that defense, but like just year to year, from a coverage standpoint, he is utterly reliable. Now, you've got Xavien Howard. And then their safeties are all former corners, right? And Eric Rowe and Bobby McCain. So that's kind of an interesting strategy. But so you did that. And then, they went out, they added Van Noy. Another Alanda Roberts, also from New England. As you start moving towards the front, like when I look at this defensive front, it looks pretty average to me. It's very Clemson-y now because they had drafted Christian Wilkins last year. I think their defensive line coach is a former Clemson guy. And then signed Shaq Lawson coming off of, a career season after a fairly disappointing year in Buffalo. So to your eye, what do you think is the upside for this defense? And like, how good do you think they can be?
So they've taken some swings in drafting that make their good, free agent acquisitions less certain. I guess I'll put it that way.
Interesting.
For example, Christian Wilkins, I didn't see a lot from him last season that would suggest living up to that first round pick. I do think Shaq Lawson adds some, they lost Cam Wake. Like they had some holes and a veteran coming off. Sure. You can't expect him to have the same season that he had last season in Buffalo. Sure. But you can expect him to be very good. Right. So that one, and I don't know what they paid for him, but adding Shaq and adding Byron Jones, which are, like you said, solid A-. You have some good, solid foundational pieces, but then you add like Christian Wilkins. I think that's a weird draft. It wasn't their best kind of draft moment. And then the nickelback that they took in the first round, Noah, and I'm not going to pretend to Igbenogany.
I practiced it. And I can't believe I didn't mention him when I was talking about secondary.
Yeah, I think it's Igbenogany, but whatever. Like,
no, that's
and I
right.
feel bad that I don't know it yet.
No, I think you got it.
Perfect. But that's a weird. That's a weird first round pick, like in terms of what was available you know, I think they did a good job. Obviously, they got their quarterback that they wanted, and obviously they got a left tackle mm-hmm. that they wanted. But I feel like their good free agent stuff was kind of marred by taking some swings with not Tua. If you want Tua, you build around Tua. I'm all about that. I am all about that life. But like, you have some weird picks. Like, I didn't like Ereck Flowers. I thought he had some horrible film. And then Austin Jackson was, to me, a bit more developmental than some of the other linemen. And I've spent a lot of my career studying big men's butts, and he's more developmental. I like him, but he has a lot of upside, but he also has a lot of question marks. So I get a little, you know, I was a little confused by their overall strategy, despite the fact that I thought they were doing really well in free agency, and then they started drafting. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's kind of how it went.
No, a lot of swings. Yeah, they're like a team where a lot of the draft picks were, I don't want to say developmental is not the wrong word, but kind of question marks, I think. So the defense is under Josh Boyer, who spent like a decade or so in New England, maybe more. Coach DB's there, and was their pass game coordinator last year. So we'll see what he does with this group. A lot of question marks. Again, this is a defense that finished 32nd in pass D. They will be better this year with that secondary and some of those guys mixed in. But, and then 27th in run defense. So there's nowhere to go but up. On the other side of the ball, it's possible that I think this offense looks worse at points because.
Yeah.
We
I'm
don't
100%
know.
With you.
Yeah. Well, okay. So
here's what I look at.
Yeah.
32nd on yards per play on first down. That means worse than the NFL on yards per play on first down. 21 sacks, which is the second most. Just for some context, on first down, the good teams, if you sort only by first down and you look to see, let's put it in order of sacks, just who allows sacks on first down, because this league more than ever, and you know this, I know I've heard you talk about this, passing, you know, first down passing is something like, do it. It's shown to be something effective, right? So the Saints, by the way, they were the best on sacks allowed on first down. They allowed 3 all season. The Dolphins had 21. That's second most. Like that's a huge difference.
Wait, who had the most?
So you're sorry?
Do you know who had the most off the top of your head?
The most? I can tell you who's had the most.
I'm so curious now because I would have.
I want to say, hold on. You know what? I can get that for you.
I'm sorry. But, ask you for information on demand.
But no, but the point is that, like, you know, you addressed it with some question marks, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where the strategy becomes very confusing, because you kind of have the same receivers. I mean, you pretty much have the same receivers, and you kind of have, sure, you added Jordan Howard and Matt Breida. Who Jordan Howard has been hurt a lot. You know, we've seen it. Exactly. So I guess my point is like, what do you expect to happen? Right? Like, what's the, like, what, okay, by the way, there are two teams that were tied for first. The Buccaneers and Cardinals both allowed 22 sacks on first down last season.
Wow.
Which is just one more than the Dolphins.
I feel like a lot of that is on the quarterbacks.
That makes a lot of sense.
So I couldn't agree more. There's a lot of uncertainty here on that offensive line. You mentioned Ereck Flowers, who, you know, obviously played better after they moved him inside, because he literally could not have been worse outside. And then there's, like, you know, Robert Hunt. Who is Robert Hunt? Austin Jackson. Not who is, but like.
I got you.
Yeah, like how, what can we get out of him? Austin Jackson, is he ready to start? I actually kind of like the wide receivers, not like Devontae Parker obviously had his huge breakout year, right? Finally. But that's 1 year.
Yep.
I love Preston Williams, but I thought he was freaking awesome and came out of nowhere. It looked like he should have been drafted in the first round, but he tore his ACL. Albert Wilson, not as good. Mike Gesicki,
Albert Wilson's
by the way,
always hurt too.
Yeah, always hurt. Yeah. Mike Gesicki, kind of good actually last year. Because of that offensive line, I don't know when the right time is to play Tua Tagovailoa. And I tend to be the person who's like very skeptical of any team that claims they're going to redshirt their quarterback. And I think it's usually kind of dumb, frankly. I mean.
Yeah, because usually what happens is about halfway through the season, it really stinks to lose. It really sucks to lose. And
Yes. It's like your quarterback is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, we know this. We've seen this movie before. He's going to have, like, hilarious four-game stretch where he's the best quarterback in the NFL. Then he's going to have four games where he throws, like, 20 interceptions, and there's going to be calls to put in Tua, and they're going to put him in. Like, Cynthia, I would, like, bet my 401k that that's exactly what's going to happen here. I'm not actually doing that if my fans.
Listen, you still work for Disney. You have a pension. So, there you go.
But, you know, if in a perfect world, I would look at the schedule and be like, let's pick the right time to transition Tua into this Chan Gailey offense, which I think has some attributes that'll be.
You know
good
who
for
else
him.
Had Chan Gailey?
Ryan Fitzpatrick. Oh, Sam Darnold. Yes. Oh God. Don't Dolphins fans. Don't watch the tape. Do not watch that tape. But the offensive line makes me really nervous about playing him.
Yes, that's exactly. And that's what I'm saying with you. When you have Austin Jackson, and I didn't have a first round rating on him, and I had like five guys going in the first round. He was one that had a lot of question marks based on the type of offense that he played in and the Pac-12 and what he's faced. And does he understand, like, I mean, it's kind of the same thing for Mekhi Becton. Speaking of Sam Darnold, like Mekhi Becton, he didn't have like true, there's a lot of play action, and which could be good, but also who knows if he's good against the pass, you know, like, I don't know, or when they're passing. So it's an interesting problem. And I see not a lot of things that inspire a lot of trust, especially considering Tua's injury. And I understand he's healthy. I'm sure he's fine, but he still had that injury, or those injuries, plural. So it seems very scary.
Mm. Yeah.
Risky.
Okay. So do we think there's a chance they finish with a winning record?
No.
Woo! Cynthia! What the heat?
Of course there's a chance.
Yeah, of course there's always a chance.
There's. I don't think it's a very realistic chance. I think it's far more realistic that, you know, 6 or 7 is the ceiling.
Dolphins fans, by the way, like, that's fine. Here's what you want out of the season. You want Tua healthy. You want a glimpse of him being good, whatever that entails, whether, you know, some play or, you know, a rare glimpse. I don't know, whatever. That's what you want. You want like a few, you want your, at least one or two of your draft picks to flash. Okay. You want to see that this offensive line can approach average. You want the secondary to look as good as you hope it can. Like, if all of those things happen, then that's a win for you this season, mm-hmm. right? Like, you just want to move in the right, you want to keep moving in the right direction. That's all.
Yeah. And look, it stinks to have to think about like punting on a season, right? But if there were a season to like just get a little bit of more footing, I still think next season the AFC East will be wide open. It depends on how the Bills do, obviously. But, you know, the dominance that the Patriots had in that division for so long is at least in question. So I don't think that the Dolphins, like it'll be a couple of years, sure. But I think that if Tua turns out to be who they anticipate him being, then they can easily, I mean, it's just so, it baffles me in this wide receiver class that they didn't go out and really get anyone. Right? Like, that's just odd, you know? And I'm not even necessarily saying in the draft, I'm saying between the draft and, I mean, they have a ton of draft picks, and between the draft and also the free agent market, because it was such a saturated wide receiver draft, you could have gotten some of these wide receivers that were floating around as free agents at a decent, you know, you could have gotten them, acquired them for a decently low cost. So because there's not scarcity. There was a lot of options. So that was an interesting strategy to me. It's like, this is one of the richest wide receiver off seasons, period. And you instead did nothing with wide receivers. Interesting. Yeah.
Where'd the money go? It's always, whenever I get to like this summer, I'm like, where did you spend your money? I mean, we know Byron Jones, you know.
I guess Byron Jones and Shaq Lawson. I don't know. Like Kyle Van Noy. Like, I don't know. Like, it's an interesting, I don't know. It's just an odd decision because you didn't need to. It does. It does add up.
All right. As always, we're going to end with 5 questions for our guests. 4 from me, 1 from Lenny.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Cynthia, question number 1. There's a little bit of a scuttlebutt involving your occasional co-host, Greg Rosenthal. He picked the best and worst NFL Twitter fan bases. I'm not going to ask you pick the worst because I know you don't want that smoke, and I respect that. Who is the best NFL Twitter fan base?
So I'm going to have to go ahead and go with the Saints. I think they're a lot of
with
fun.
Greg.
They're interesting. Like, they get a little mad if you don't pick them, but they kind of understand because they know they're good still. So it's also a function of the fact that they've been good for a while. They know they've got a really good team, so they can kind of handle it. But if you go on a limb, I remember last season I had to do a lone wolf, and they make me on game day morning, they make you put on a wolf hat, which is gross, and then you have to howl. And they were so happy when I was the only one on the set to pick them, and they couldn't have been nicer. And that carried me through the rest of the season, even though I didn't pick them every time. So they're a lot of fun. And I think they do a really good job of, like, sometimes they're poignant, sometimes they're funny. Poignant. Sometimes they do a really good job. They do. I'm going to go with the Saints.
I'm down with whatever fan base agrees with me is usually the best fan base.
Totally.
I love the Falcons. I love Falcons Twitter generally. I think they're great because they're kind of miserable in a delightful way. Like, I just really respect that, and that they're still here. I just love that.
Yeah, no, they're great too, for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'd like to say the Lions, but because I'm, you know, a Lions fan, but like, they we're all just defeated.
Oh, okay. Well, that actually is a great transition to my second question, because I know you are a Lions fan and you're from Michigan. Is there any chance Matt Stafford is an MVP candidate?
Nope. Not because of him. I think he's really good. I think he's super underrated, but that's a bad team.
Really? Team. You're not high on your squad? Because they're being talked about, and I haven't done the NFC North yet, but they're like a sneaky hipster, this team could be a lot better this year pick.
Okay. Good for them. Like,
look at you. Look at you. I love it. I love the jaded. Jaded fans are the best kind of fans. I love it.
I love the, listen, they've got some of the best colors in the league, and you know, like, and Ford Field has gyros, which is like really good food. I'm calling it like I see it. The team, not so good. The food, awesome. We're fat in Detroit. That's just how it works.
Since this is your area of expertise, what's the number one thing like holding them back in your mind?
The fact that they can't figure out that Matthew Stafford is, you got to give him some run support. Yes, I understand they have presumably two running backs. They drafted a guy in the second round who's great. But look, they've got to figure out how to optimize for Matthew Stafford while he's one of the toughest, most resilient quarterbacks. And for whatever reason, they cannot keep him upright. The O-line always lets him down. I don't know what it is, because they're drafting guys who are, you know, pretty good usually. And they've got decent receivers. They've got decent tight ends. They've got decent, hopefully their running backs will help a little bit, but they cannot figure that offense out to save their life. And they keep acquiring Patriots like defects for the defense, and it hasn't panned out. Or they pick guys who are super injured, and it hasn't panned out. God. So take some average people, put them in there, and make it better.
Collins and Shelton, right? This year.
Yep.
That we mentioned. Yeah. It is really.
Yeah. Let's
remarkable.
Keep doing that. I've seen this game before.
Trey
Flowers played like seven snaps last season. Okay, that's a little hyperbole, but still.
They are like, their relationship to the Patriots is like the person who, instead of working out, wears like a t-shirt with painted on abs. I feel like that's their, that's me. Okay, I ask every guest this. Third question, what's a quarantine content recommendation? Something you've enjoyed?
So I'm like a weirdo, and I'm a big like documentary. Like, I like, you know, murder, true crime stuff.
A lot of
like,
people do. That's really hot right now.
I know. And then, like, this one's really weird, and I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but I just recently, like, I can't stop thinking about the Jeffrey Epstein documentary that I just watched, because it was so messed up. Oh. You watched it?
I have not watched it. No, it's Netflix is always like, this is the number one thing in America, and I get nervous.
Like, you watch it, and you're just like, ugh! Like, it is appalling, but...
Is it riveting?
Like, and you're like, how? I have so many questions. I want to know where he got his money. I want to understand what's the true relationship with Bill Clinton? Mm-hmm. There's so many questions. All right. I need another documentary to answer them.
You don't have to give an answer, but my next question, I'm calling audible, is if you think he didn't kill himself, say nothing. Okay, question five, as always, coming from Lenny. Lenny saw you tweet that you're not down with peeing in the shower. And he just wants to know if you judge him for peeing in public.
Lenny is a dog. Dogs can pee wherever their owners allow them and wherever they want. Dogs, they don't wear clothes. Dogs, there's a lot of things that are different. Dogs are better than humans. Well, okay, some dogs wear clothes, but they don't have to wear clothes. Dogs are better than humans. We don't really deserve dogs most of the time. They can do whatever the heck they want. As far as humans go, do you clean your shower? I don't care. What, ugh, like, why you're getting clean in there? Like, go to the bathroom before you get into the shower, and then you can get optimally clean. I don't understand why people need to pee in the shower. I've never understood this. For years, I've had, ask Mike Golic Jr., we've had this discussion. I think it's disgusting. I don't want, like, I can't even believe people. I was, like, baffled that so many people did it. I thought it was just, like, kind of like boys being gross. But nope, girls pee in the shower, too, and I think all of them are disgusting for it.
And that is the final word.